The following podcast is a production of Cascadia.fm.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Well, from high above the milk packing district here in southeast Portland, it's Legion of News. I know, that intro doesn't sound as dynamic as it usually does. Also, the introductory music isn't as loud as it usually is, because I'm trying to figure out how to do this as I go along. I'm Don Taylor, and I am beside Jim Willick.
Hello.
Who is sitting in for me on our one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge. Everywhere. He is right now readying a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
Chernobyl to Japan. Anything you can do, I can do better as nuclear plants explode. Democrats are keeping the labor fight alive in Wisconsin. And over 30,000 people brave the rain for yesterday's Shamrock Run. That's why you were late trying to get downtown anywhere.
Well, as always, my friends have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. And now prepare yourselves. I give you Legion of News. And it should be this, I think. Hey, listen to that. Why isn't that loud enough?
Yeah.
All right.
It's there. That's what's important.
It's day one of me flying solo on the board. You're going to have to forgive me for everything.
All the directions are written in Esperanto. I mean, what are you supposed to do? What is one supposed to do?
I know. I have a notebook full of stuff, and I've been trying to figure out how to do it as I go along. And everything was going quite well until... I'm actually talking to the people at Cascadia going, can you hear me? Is there actually a show? Anyway, why don't you talk about something while I gather these packages.
Is the Jesus recorder going?
No, I didn't record the show either.
Perfect.
We could start the whole thing over again, but...
Well, we can...
I'll fix it in post.
We'll fix it in post. Not
there
a problem.
There we go.
Well,
hold on. Don't talk for a second.
Okay.
We're going to actually start recording so we get all of the actual news recorded for a download later. Arm it and then record. Hey, okay. Welcome to Legion of News. This is Jim Willick. He's giving you some. Go.
Nuclear plant explodes in Japan. Democrats keeping the labor fight alive in Wisconsin. And over 30,000 soggy people braved the Shamrock Run yesterday. First up, Democrats keeping the labor fight alive in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's anti-union bill, which has been getting a lot of press, is now law. But the fight in the Badger State is only beginning. Rallied by the national outpouring of support that came over the past 3 weeks, Democrats are mobilizing again to begin recall efforts against the state's GOP senators and do everything in their power to keep the budget battle going.
So they decided to come out of hiding then. Now that the Republicans already voted on everything. Now,
like, well, what the F, man?
They're popping out of their holes like it's Groundhog Day.
If they see their shadow, then it'll be three more weeks of people protesting, sit-ins, and they're like, dude, Wisconsin knows how to do it right. Like, I've seen some protests. This is hearkening back to, like, the 60s and 70s, man. People just getting drunk in state buildings, sitting arms locked. At every possible juncture. Normally, when you hear about like a union quaffing or a fight going on somewhere where the unions are just not getting their way, you got a couple of people standing out in front of like a grocery store with a sign like, "Hey, these people suck. Don't come in here and buy stuff." But rarely do you see it to the degree that they're doing it in Wisconsin. The Washington Post, Greg Sargent, reports that the Progressive Change Campaign Committee and Democracy for America has raised over $1 million this week for recall efforts. And a homecoming rally in Madison yesterday for the 14 Democratic state senators who fled the state to avoid voting on Governor Scott Walker's bill drew between 800,000 and 100,000 people. So, it doesn't seem like this is this issue is going away anytime soon.
As well, it shouldn't.
No.
Down with the man, I say.
Well, it's one of those things where it's a juxtaposition where if this does in fact work, then it's going to be inspiring to other unions that have similar issues across the country. They're like, usually they'll break down to the point where like, okay, well, we'll just sit somewhere in a small smoke-filled room, a la the men show, the mystery men.
Oh yeah.
But they're sitting around a lot of Chinese food takeout, and like guys with like shirt sleeves rolled up, like all right, what if we give you like casual Fridays where you can wear a wacky tie in lieu of say dental? No, not good enough.
Also, like I saw a photo online, and I don't know if it was a photoshopped photo, or I'm hoping someone actually did this, but it was one of those signs you see when you enter a state on an interstate highway, mm-hmm. and it said, "Welcome to Wisconsin," and underneath there was a little sign on the bottom. It said, "A division of Koch Industries." Koch Industries, I guess they pronounce it.
Well, yeah, meanwhile, the Politico reports that the scuffle in Wisconsin is being closely watched by the White House, which is considering labor as a potential major theme in the 2012 campaign. So, when you're getting attention from Big Papa Obama, then it's really time to kind of get this thing cleared up too sweet. Because it's more of the same. Them kind of like gerrymandering around the actual issue until they're finally cornered and realize, hey, if you want anything to work back in Wisconsin, you're going to have to give them what they want, I think.
Elsewhere, 2 days ago, officials feared as many as 1,300 could be dead in Japan following Friday's massive earthquake and tsunami. Now they're saying that at least 10,000 have died in just one coastal town. A senior political official said the casualties in the port town of... I could
go
do
ahead
this.
And say it.
I could do this.
You go run at it.
Minamisan Riku.
That was less offensive than Jerry Lewis in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, well, thank
that
you.
Was like, that's like a
that
three.
No, that was Mickey
Lewis.
Rooney.
Mickey Rooney? That's Mick right, Rooney it was Mickey Rooney.
In Breakfast at Tiffany's.
So it was like maybe a two on the Rooney scale.
The Rooney scale of how badly you mangle the Japanese language. Casualties would certainly be more than 10,000 out of a population of 17,000. Japan has mobilized 100,000 troops for a relief effort and injected $86 billion into the economy to address the catastrophe. Thousands of Japanese remain homeless, and millions are without basic amenities such as water or power. Prime Minister Naoto Kan called the situation the worst crisis since World War II in a news conference Sunday, adding, "If the nation works together, we will overcome." And the Japanese stock market plummeted as well, with the main index dropping 5.5%.
Yowza.
And then, adding insult to injury, the second hydrogen explosion in 3 days rocked a Japanese nuclear plant on Monday, sending a massive cloud of smoke into the air and injuring 11 workers. The blast was felt for 25 miles, but the plant's operator said the radiation levels at the affected unit were still within legal limits. Later on Monday,
still within. What is really what is on the outskirts? We're like, okay, this is really getting out of hand.
When Godzilla comes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Then you know that the radiation has gotten out of control.
It's a 1.5 gamma is
right.
What we're staring at right
it's
now.
Like, you know, okay, we're only at 2 Mothra. We're fine. We're fine for now. We can get this back under control. The Tokyo Electric on Monday warned that the fuel rods at the separate reactor in the plant unit 2 were fully exposed for a time after it lost its ability to cool down. The exposure raises the risk of the unit overheating and adds to the fears of a potential third explosion at
the
plant.
Yeah, the water levels in the reactors have dropped sharply, prompting plant officials to state, "We're not optimistic." Like, before they're like, "You know what? Could, you know, we got it's not that bad. You know, it's you know, we can potentially pull this nosedive out." But now they're at the point now where they're just like, really, how much worse can it get at this point?
I keep thinking there's some kind of a tasteless joke to be made about China syndrome, and this is happening in Japan, but I can't really think of what it is.
Michael Douglas unavailable for comment.
So, what you got for me?
Let's see here.
India. This is Jim Willig at the news desk.
Thank you very much. India cracks down on pilots flying with fake licenses. Catch them if you can. Indian aviation officials are checking the licenses of more than 4,000 pilots after four were discovered to be flying under forged documents. Two pilots were arrested last week for using a patently fake licenses, obviously printed on a cracker or some other edible medium, while two others were currently under investigation for suspicious paperwork. Authorities say that the chances of finding more forgeries are relatively slim. Fake licenses are very few and far between, so there's really no need to panic. But so this basically brings the question up to me, do you want your pilot to be drunk? Or do you want your pilot to be fake? Your thoughts, Don Taylor?
I'm thinking that probably a fake. Because fake. It seems to me, I haven't heard any stories about them, you know, crashing into anything. Or like dumping a plane into the ocean, which we know happens with drunk pilots.
Yeah.
So, and obviously they somehow...
But in New York we do it right, okay? We land belly up, we're okay.
Obviously, they figured out how to actually fly the plane all on their own, which shows some stick-to-itiveness and gumption, I say.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, I think rather than punish them, I mean, you know, punish them a little bit, but then how about you go, you know, you guys are actually pretty good pilots. You've been doing a fine job. How about you, like, take the test and we'll give you a license? I mean, they've already got their airtime.
Yeah. Well, I'm just intrigued by people just like, you know what? I feel like, you know, pretending to be a pilot. This whole life of doing a tech support for Americans is just becoming boring. I yearn for the clear blue skies. I'm just going to slap on a fake hat and stand in the pilot's lounge at my local TSA.
The ladies do like the pilots.
Oh, dude, yeah.
So, you know. But you don't have to actually fly a plane, I don't think, to pretend to be a pilot. You could just get the uniform and, like, go to a bar.
That's like, that's right, ladies. All aboard U.S. me. In a related story, Al-Qaeda releases Glossy Ladies magazine. When they're not plotting the next terror attack, Al-Qaeda spends its time expanding into the lucrative world of print journalism. According to the UK Daily Mail, the terror organization has launched a ladies' magazine.
Ooh.
To complement Inspire, the jihadi glossy that brought readers articles such as Make a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom. The cover of The Majestic Woman, which the Mail has...
The Majestic Woman? That's the title of this magazine?
It's kind of like the Jihad Cosmo. Offers advice about marrying a muhajid. That word?
One of them guys.
Yeah. And how to raise future freedom fighters. And tips for and keeping skin clear while under a burqa. Which
is, is this a real magazine or is someone being had?
It would lead one.
Raising a freedom fighter? That would be a tip off that perhaps someone is having the wool pulled over their eyes.
Well, they don't have Facebook over there. They don't even have MySpaces, for God's sake. So how is this information going to travel from sect to sect? It's hard enough to get any information. I think it's a good idea. I just hope that maybe they've got, like, good satirical cartoons for these magazines, if you will. But, okay.
Ladies' magazines, sadly, unlike men's magazines, ladies' magazines tend to be sadly lacking in cartoons.
Yeah.
Because, you know, women have no sense of humor.
Or, like, is your suicide bomber really into you, or is he faking it? Take our quiz. There are also interviews with widows of suicide bombers, and the cover features a veiled woman offset by a submachine gun. Al-Qaeda, see how effective magazines are at pushing the ideals of Western culture and want to try the same thing, basically. So I guess if you can't beat them, join them.
When the and then, of course, tips like when you're hiding in a cave in Afghanistan, diet.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
I would steer away from carbs.
Yeah.
Though I guess
it's going to be kind of carby because what else are you going to get, really?
Yeah, so I guess maybe fried foods would be a nay-nay.
No, that would be bad for the skin because you're in an enclosed environment.
Yeah,
so,
the skin doesn't breathe well.
Right. All right. Organizers said 30,500 participants signed up for Portland's 33rd Shamrock Run on Sunday. Yeah. The run included five different races, starting with a kids' 1K leprechaun lap. at 7:45 a.m. because the kids love to get up at 7:45 a.m.
with a bunch of hungover parents
to run a race, as do their parents. An 8K race followed that at 8:05. The 15K challenge began at 8:35, and a 5K run started at 8:55. Thank you for the numbers. The Shamrock Stride for walkers only began at 9 o'clock. All the races started at the corner of Southwest NATO Parkway and Southwest Pine. So, as Jim said, if you were downtown and couldn't get anywhere on yesterday, that would be why. Because even when it's raining, we have to, like, shut down half the city so people can walk or run for something.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I was working yesterday downtown at my pornography depot. And even the rain...
At World O Porn...
World or Wankers, we still had a plethora of people through the door. Like, nor rain, nor sleet, nor dark of night will keep a porn enthusiast from their appointed rounds.
Did you get anybody in, like, running outfits? Like, they were running the race, and they decided to just pop in and get some porn, and then just pop back out and keep running?
Sure enough, we did. We had three women that were in there. Like, I came in, and I just clocked in. I just put my bag and my coat down. I turn around, and there are these three women kind of standing around our shoe section. And they're debating something. And I'm like, why are they looking like they're marathon runners? And then it dawned on me. I'm like, oh, I guess they're part of the Shamrock Run. And as I turned back around, they were all three making a hasty retreat, as if, oh, you saw me. Got to give you my pot of gold now. But I'm just surprised that the Irish Defamation League hasn't gotten a hold of this. Like, you know, we're not all just sprinters and enthusiasts about, you know, running for causes. We're also drunks. Let's remember that, shall we?
Yes. Yeah, I went to, we did the Sleep Country Bowl, Pajama Bowl on Sunday. And my husband decided, he was coming with me, and I decided to put on pajama pants and the thing to support our team. And so, yeah. I said to Patrick, I said, yeah, you want to wear pajamas too? And he's like, sure, I could do that. And the thing is, when he was in the hospital recently, I had told his mother that if he, in lieu of, like, bringing flowers or a stuffed animal or something, I said what he could actually really use is, like, another pair or two of flannel pajama pants, especially now that he's in the hospital. Yeah. So she ended up being a mom. She came and she brought him, like five pair with matching T-shirts and stuff. And so we went through his matching pajama sets that he has now. And so what he wore were green plaid flannel pajama pants with the T-shirt that she had given him that to go with it, that was green and said on it Irish yoga, and has basically a drunk guy, three little drunk Irishmen, like, apparently falling off of a chair or something, because that is the way of our people. Apparently,
that is
what we do.
It is true, lassie. I'm half Irish and half German, so I also empathize with this particular time of year. But yeah, I enjoy a good bowling for a good cause. I participated in several of the pajama bowls in the past, and it's one of those things where you get there and you know you're doing it for a good cause, but at the same time you still can't help but hate yourself for the complete lack of athletic talent that you have, and even so much as rolling a ball down a lane to knock over pins.
See, I was busy hating the other teams.
Oh, good.
Because we worked really, really hard. Our team, and by we, I mean the people who actually did the stuff, and I just went, yay, you go, kids.
Go team us.
Because other than me, like, you know, PayPaling a pittance to the thing, I did nothing. But our team managed to raise, by the time the thing happened, we had raised the most money of any team. We were in the number one for donations. We actually had raised over $2,000.
So you knocked off that other squad that had, like, one guy donate over a grand to the winning team.
So we went into this thing going, we're number one, this is awesome, and, like, figuring, okay, everybody's wearing, you know, a team costume. This will work. We gave them T-shirts to wear that said Emerson News Network Bowling Team. All this stuff going on. So if they bowl well and all these other things, we might actually pull this out. And so, of course, there's some team who goes, so we had a bet between our warehouses of which team could raise the most money, and we wanted to be the ones to raise the... So we just wrote a check for $2,000 to add to what they've got. And we're like, Well, screw you guys. You can't just walk in the day of the thing and write a check for $2,000. So I decided next year what we need to do is we need to make friends with someone who is very, very rich.
Yeah.
Who will just come and just hang out. And then at the very last minute go, well, what do you need to put you over the top? Here you go, Sonny. And then they'll just write a check for like $5,000. And then we'll all get free mattresses.
Thanks, Uncle Phil Knight. You're awesome.
Because apparently that's how you do it.
Yeah.
You just buy it with a check.
But it's so nice to see something as noble as raising money for the betterment care of foster kids.
Oh, screw the kids.
Can still bring out the pettiness and the ugliness in human nature. Just be like, no, we care more. You guys suck. Our love's better than your love.
Also, I'm going to be doing a little bit of an in-between later, because in case you're wondering, I am doing this with Jim Mulick today because Rick Emerson is away for the week. He's in New York doing busy Rick Emerson things. So, and also I'm going to be doing a little 45-minute to an hour in-between before the Rick Emerson show following this. And we'll be talking to Aaron Duran, who he had a team at Sleep Country. And they didn't win either, but they seem to have a lot more fun than our team did, because they just decided they were going to try and steal as many prizes as possible because, you know, they were pirates. So every time, like, the chick would come by who had, like, DVDs and tickets to the opera and stuff like that, if you happened to get a spare, they would go, hey, we got a spare. And she would never check, and she would just give them prizes. So apparently they got, like, a big pile of crap just for lying.
That's rad. Well, no, I remember the one year that I had participated, we actually had, I think, two league bowlers. So, like, two people on our team that were legitimately talented at bowling. So, I think back then it was how much money you would raise plus, like, your overall bowling score, I guess. They kind of factored in somehow. But we ended up getting, I think, fifth place, which instead of getting a mattress, we all just got, like, a Tempur-Pedic pillow. This pillow I still have and love to death, because it is seriously, it weighs like a good, like, 5 pounds. Like, it is a heavy-ass pillow, very dense, but also very much, it's got like the consistency of butter. Like, it's very hard when you first put your weight on it, but then it slowly kind of forms into whatever, like, shape or mold that your head is in. So to this day, I still have that pillow. Love it to death. Mm.
I stayed at a bed and breakfast once where they had that memory foam stuff, the Swedish memory foam or whatever it's called, which is like sleeping on a big slab of warm, wet clay.
Yeah,
really. You lay on it, and it very slowly kind of conforms to your body, which is awesome if you only lay in one position all night.
Yeah.
But if you roll over, you now have this, like, hard, lumpy form of your body to, like, have to contend with, and then you have to wait while it forms to the new position you're in. And meanwhile, you're going, ow, ow, what was ow? God, ah. So I decided that's not really all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, very few murders take place in Tempur-Pedic beds just because of the fact that, like, well, we can tell based on, you know, the position of the body that he's been here for exactly this long.
That's why few murders take place in Tempur-Pedic beds.
I watched Dexter. I'm hip. I'm what's happening in now with the kids.
With the serial killer kids,
yeah.
What they think about the, well, I would kill him here, but it's a Tempur-Pedic, so no.
Yeah, let's move on to that guy and that bag of springs down the way.
Well, I'm going to attempt to play the science music to do a little science news. So let's see if anybody can hear the science news. No, not really. I have no idea why it's like this. I've got the right slider and everything. There's the balance. All right. Yeah, okay. Anyway, this would be science news, which is brought to you by Squires Electric. Squires Electric have been in Portland for 12 years. Joe Squires was born here and grew up in Washougal.
Right on.
Their phone number, and you should write this down, is 503-252-1609. And basically, if you have anything electrical you need done, anything that has to do with wires, and you don't want to, like, electrocute yourself and end up, like, burnt to a crisp, or, like, having a heart attack and lying on the floor, or even just humiliating yourself in front of your family, you should call professionals. And those professionals are Squires Electric. You can find them online at squireselectric.com. They give you free estimates. No job is too small. They will literally come out and rewire, you know, one outlet in your house, or, I'm assuming, too large. As far as I know, they have never told anyone,
your job is too much for us to handle.
Yeah.
If anything has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Call Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. And this is our science news. With our clothing high-rises, technology, and more, we humans would seem to be animal kingdom outsiders, Jim Willig.
Yeah.
Existing outside the norm, but despite all our advances, it turns out we age and die at the same rate as other primates.
Yay, question mark?
I don't know. The finding, published in the latest issue of Science, shows how strong our ties are to chimpanzees, gorillas, and other primates, and counters the long-held belief that with our relatively long lifespans and access to modern medicine, we age more slowly than other animals. What they have discovered is really we're much more similar in our aging patterns to other primates than anyone had ever suspected. Humans are a bit of an enigma, said one project leader. We live much longer than would be expected based on our body sizes, our morphology, our maturation rates, and I almost didn't say maturation. I read too fast sometimes. And our reproduction rates. When comparisons have been made between humans versus lab or domestic animals, humans have had slower rates of aging. But no one until now had previously brought together details on aging and mortality for multiple wild living primates. And it turns out that they all experience high infant mortality, followed by a period of low mortality during the juvenile stage, and an extended period of increasing age-specific mortality from mid to late life. The patterns apply to many animals, however, but when they looked at all primates, we're all actually kind of similar.
So let's just say for the sake of argument that the world evolved into a civilization of apes. The planet of the apes did in fact happen. Okay. Humans were kind of kept in captivity.
Right.
If the primates decided to have a zoo, which I seriously doubt they would, but if they did.
No, why wouldn't they?
Yeah, and then so the primate house would be the people house. How do you think they would have our habitat simulated for us to sort of look like we are, like, you know, comfortable and at home?
Well, the thing is, we would not have evolved to wear clothes and have houses. We would be like the humans on the Planet of the Apes. So, you know, they would have us in... It depends on which version of the Planet of the Apes you look at.
Well, I'm looking at the true blue Charlton Heston version, not the Marky Mark BS.
So in that case, we'd just be like, you know, wearing furs and living... You know, living in the wild and ooking each other. So they really just have something that was probably not dissimilar to what the habitats we make for gorillas.
So it wouldn't be like a really bad Apple computer with a dial-up modem and some bad inexpensive pornography strewn about.
That would be if primates started to evolve now and evolved past us.
Okay.
And then it was like, and we just stayed like we are now, and then they put us in zoos. Then that's what we would have.
A couple of copies of, you know, outdated copies of Jihad, Cosmos.
A plasma screen and a Barca lounger, you know, and a bag of Cheetos.
And all the episodes of Everybody Hates Chris that you can stomach.
They all seemed to love, What About Jim? Because it was on forever. So we'll just show them an endless loop of What About Jim?
Dr. Zayas, which I don't understand it either. The show really doesn't seem to go anywhere. But for whatever reason, the humans like it. So we like to keep them docile.
For some reason, this less attractive human was married to a far more attractive human mate, and he kept doing ridiculous things, and yet she kept forgiving him, and for some reason they find that entertaining.
Yes, the aesthetically unpleasing male had another aesthetically more unaesthetically pleasing friend who also screwed up and got him into trouble as well. For some reason the attractive female primate just kept him around both for some mysterious reason. I don't understand it myself.
Perhaps she was mating with both of them off camera. On St. Patrick's Day, for the first time, a small NASA spacecraft called MESSENGER will enter into Mercury's orbit, circling at times as close as 125 miles from the planet's surface. And by coincidence, a few days before that will be the best time all year for people on Earth to see Mercury with the naked eye.
Cool.
Barely bigger than our moon, but much more distant, Mercury is not easy to see without a telescope. An odd pairing with giant Jupiter will make it easier to spot starting Sunday, probably the best opportunity for a year. Jeff Chester at the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington said that people should look to the west after sunset. Jupiter will be about 10 degrees above the western horizon. Mercury will be about a finger's width to the right of Jupiter. So, I have nothing to say about
that. Do you do much stargazing?
No.
Really?
Not really, no.
Did you, in your youth, did you partake in any cannabis ingestion?
I did, but it was usually indoors.
Well, okay, but based on that, Laser Floyd started in a planetarium.
Yeah, I do remember that. Well, yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, I know, I think all but one of my friends that are all, like, stargazers or avid stargazers are also avid enthusiasts of combustible partyables, we'll say. So, really, there's nothing better than, like, because, I mean, if you're staring up at the stars, yes, it takes forever to kind of get that focus in just right so you can actually see all the craters on the moon and stuff like that. So while you're doing that, why not have, you know, a little dark side playing in the background? You know, I just, it seems like a natural progression of things. Plus, gives you ample time to get a J rolled. I don't know. I'm not condoning all of this activity amongst stargazers, but I'm just saying, if you haven't tried it, you give it a whirl. Yeah, see what you like.
Those are the words of Jim Willick, not not the position of Cascadia.fm or this program.
Stargazers International, my group.
We would not encourage anyone to partake of any illegal substances while looking at stars and maybe, you know, eating Cheetos.
If you want to airbrush a dragon on the side of your van, brother, go ahead and do it. Chevy van, man.
Okay, that's, I'll get rid of that. That's the news. That's the science. What you got for me, Jim Willig?
Well, going back to Japan, Lady Gaga and other celebrities are taking up the Japanese cause, which this kind of warms my heart. I'm sure nothing a country ravaged by tsunamis, earthquakes, and now nuclear meltdown needs is a cuckoo clock wearing a meat suit coming over and saying it's going to be okay. But after tweeting their prayers and good wishes for the people.
Oh, thank God! Gaga's here!
You're
saved.
I just lost my house and 90% of my family, but Lady Gaga tweeted that she hopes things get better soon. People of Japan, after March 11th's deadly earthquake, Lady Gaga and other celebrities have started rallying fans to donate to the nation's earthquake and tsunami relief. Gaga has designed a Japan prayer bracelet featuring "We Pray for Japan" written both in Japanese and English, with all proceeds going to the relief efforts. This is my favorite. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park has designed a T-shirt to benefit music for reliefs. Tsunami relief in Japan. So basically, instead of just sending money or goods and food and shelter, we're going to buy, you can buy a bracelet and we'll send some of the money over to that. Why do I need a trinket to immortalize this moment that I'll eventually sell at a yard sale 10 years from now?
Speaking of which, don't you think at this point the guy from Linkin Park and Lady Gaga have enough money they could just send them money?
Yeah.
And not like design a bracelet that we're supposed to spend, like, you know, $10 on or whatever. And
yeah, send a couple of Winnebagos.
Just send them the money.
Yeah, send them your tour bus from, like, the Transformers soundtrack tour.
You know, cut back on the catering for the craft services for, you know, a while. Maybe, you know, give them 50% of that.
Yeah, but since Friday, other celebrities, including Katy Perry, P. Diddy, Conan O'Brien, Chris Brown, which I'm sure Japan really wants the money of a obvious wife beater, and George Takei have urged followers to donate to the American Red Cross. See, that makes sense. But here's the best part. Charlie Sheen has vowed to donate $1 from every ticket sold to his, I kid you not, live concert show to the Red Cross.
Winning,
yes. Why don't you send over a raft made of Coke, Charlie? That'd be sweet.
Yeah, just one suitcase full of Coke would probably help them all enormously.
Seriously, it's like Schindler's List. It's like, you know, Charlie Sheen's like, this rock of cocaine could have saved like an entire village. If only I gave more.
Wasn't it like a $50,000 worth of cocaine or something in that suitcase full of Coke he had that one time?
Easily.
And so he says he's going to donate $1 from each ticket sold to his freak show.
You have to buy a ticket take the ride, but just a dollar.
Wasn't he making something like $30 million a season?
On
Three and a Half Men.
It was $1.something million per episode.
Yeah, just send some damn money.
No,
No. Or, yeah, send a couple
don't
of...
Use it as an ex- don't use it as a PR stunt to tell people about your stupid show.
Yeah, if you don't come to my show, you don't care about Japan. You care about Japan, don't you? Come on, check me out.
You know, I don't really care about Japan, but this sounds like a great opportunity to get the word out about this show I'm putting on.
I would like to see maybe some fan-based fiction of Charlie Sheen finding out about the tsunami, then instantly teleporting himself from California to Japan, using his warlock blood to heal the earth and tectonic plate damage, to use his coke vision to seal the cracks in various nuclear plants. You know, I'm thinking that in this situation, drugs could prove to be the savior of the moment.
That's it. Now forget the dollar per ticket. Come on, Charlie Sheen. Show us how powerful you truly are.
Yeah, if you can heal yourself by thinking about it in a millisecond, take 15 minutes out of your busy day and heal a country. Because I'm thinking that's really all it takes, about 15 minutes of Charlie Sheen time.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen standard time.
If he can clean up from cocaine and whatnot in a nanosecond, as he said,
yeah,
just by closing his eyes, a nanosecond. You know, saving all of Japan should take an hour tops.
Yeah, take one episode of Firefly and just donate that to the relief fund. Charlie Sheen should just be donating Charlie Sheen time to the relief effort, and I think that would do more than the Red Cross put together. So,
a Bohemian hunter is setting up traps for hipsters in New York City, according to Gawker, which found a Reddit user who actually documented it. According to the picture, the prankster has baited large fake steel jaw traps with Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, American Spirits, a bike chain, and a pair of neon pink Wayfarer sunglasses.
Oh, my.
The hipster hunter has then chained them to signposts around the city. Gawker warns that, quote, before you object to the choices of bait, remember that having any opinion at all about hipsters or the taste preferences automatically renders you a hipster.
Ooh. Yeah. He should be like the Pied Piper, just basically getting an iPod and cranking out some really obscure Frank Zappa music for them to sort of be like, hey, you know, I've got feelings about that particular album, and then like just leading them into a truck and then firing that truck out of a cannon into the sun.
Yeah, I don't think the Pabst Blue Ribbon and the American Spirits would last long in a fake steel jaw trap around Portland, around Southeast Portland. They would just kind of go, what the hell, it probably won't hurt me. And they'd just take them.
I got a quick joke for you. How many hipsters does it take to change a light bulb? It's some obscure number I'm sure you've never heard of. So.
Bam!
Boom!
We gave it to the hipsters!
Winning!
In your face, hipsters!
You like that? Oh, you like that, hipster?
Good news for Rupert Murdoch.
Finally, something good.
The iPad 2 performed better than its predecessor in opening weekend sales, selling out almost entirely by Saturday and largely to new buyers. According to Munster, whoever that is, who tracks Apple product launches, the company sold between 400,000 and 500,000 iPad 2s over the weekend. The original iPad only sold 300,000 total.
Oh, those are crap, too. I got a patch on my house I'm just using old iPads for.
That's the thing about Apple products. Anything that is previous is crap.
Yeah.
Only the brand newest. You know, it's like tomorrow when the iPad 3 comes out, all the ones they bought this weekend are going to be crap.
Useless. Might as well be made out of Pop-Tarts.
A survey of 236 buyers waiting in line suggested that 70% of these sales were new iPad owners. Buyers were split 50-50 between Mac and PC users, which Munster says is especially significant. We believe this shows that Apple is expanding its base of iPad users, which is critical to maintaining its early lead in the growing tablet market. I did read a piece online this weekend, though, that despite wherever this press release came from, the sales for the iPad on the AT&T network were considerably brisker than the ones on the Verizon network, because the thing is,
the cap.
Well, it's really just a matter of there are already a lot of, because iPhone was on AT&T exclusively for so long. Mm-hmm. There's already a lot of, you know, people who have been with AT&T for a long time, and if you're already on AT&T and you have an iPhone, you're going to get the iPad that goes with AT&T, because honestly, why are you going to get Verizon just for your iPad? Meanwhile, they still haven't like gotten into the market with the iPhone enough that you're going to have people buying brand new iPads and going, sure, what the hell, I'll it's a crapshoot, I'll go with Verizon. Because, you know, why not just go with AT&T? So it's really, because most iPads are being sold to people who already own iPhones.
Yeah. So, and plus, there's so much technology that is now common, well, not really, but it's fairly common knowledge. The information that is required to upgrade and to augment technology that you can purchase is so readily available through the internet and various other outlets that making something that just comes out synonymous with one particular media outlet is you're shooting yourself in the foot, because as soon as you say that you can only use this particular phone or this particular iPad on this particular medium, that's telling all the hackers and everyone else out there too, like, okay, well then I'm going to find a way, just because you're telling me that I can't put that on say Verizon, then I'm going to go ahead and do that anyway. So, I mean, it's just shooting yourself in the foot. I'm just trying to make myself sound intelligent, like I know what I'm talking about.
I just want to share an especially creepy message from the text box. Somebody, because whether or not listeners are aware of it, we're here at the fine Emerson News Network studio, which has big black curtains that we keep pulled closed most of the time so that we're not distracted by, you know, the sights and sounds of beautiful Southeast Portland. And Rick doesn't like the glare on his screens. So, you know, so Jim and I decided to go for a little natural light. We have the curtains open today, and I get a message on the text box that says, I liked it better when the room was dark. So apparently, somebody knows where we are and looked to see if the curtains were open, and then had to send me a text about it.
Yeah, there's a rear window style Jimmy Stewart guy sitting in a wheelchair across the way, just licking the glass, making obscene finger gestures with his hands.
Yeah, it's not just me. That's creepy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And tell Dawn that she's got something in her hair.
I like her sweater today. It's pretty. She looks good in purple.
Well, speaking of creepy people, Richard Hatch is going to return to prison for 9 months.
Survivor Richard Hatch or Battlestar Galactica Richard Hatch?
The less cooler of the two. That would be Survivor Richard Hatch. The winner and current Celebrity Apprentice, star Richard Hatch has been sent back to prison to serve 9 more months for neglecting to file taxes on his $1 million prize from Survivor.
Come on!
Yeah, you know, it's one thing to have $1 million and know that taxes are going to be imminent. That's hard enough. But when you win said $1 million on national effing television so that everybody knows about it, I'm fairly certain one person at the IRS is going to walk past a television appliance store while they're showing the winner, like, oh, I bet you that guy's going to be sending us a check sometime soon. Oh, no, well, guess what? We're going to send the guy's name Tony with the axe handles after him, and we're going to get our money one way or the other. So the Associated Press reports, though he has released after serving about 3 years in 2009, he has since been under supervised release. Yeah, he has since failed to refile his 2000. Really, you get out of prison and you're like, yeah, I'll get to it tomorrow. And still you don't file your taxes from about, I don't know, 10 effing years ago? Go to stumble past an H&R Block. You know, throw on a towel or just go naked. That'll guarantee somebody helps you out rather too sweet. But now he owes an estimated $2 million to the IRS. So the $1 million that he got,
genius,
gone. Now he owes twice that in back funds and everything else. So
he's going to have to go on another reality show. Call it like Richard Hatch's cash grab. And it's just the only purpose for it is just everyone knows it's about him trying to make money to he could take a number of various jobs in various industries just trying to earn the money to pay back his taxes.
He could be on a game show called Name That Drug, where he takes various things that Richard that Charlie Sheen has said and then tries to augment, gives people a chance to guess, like I'll say MDMA. Sorry, very close. It was actually crystal meth. Sorry. So I don't know.
There are a lot of celebrities that would want to participate in that show, by the way.
There we go. Richard, if you're listening, and I know you are.
Next week, Gary Busey.
Gary Busey blood. Speaking of warlocks.
So the person in the text box that I accused of being creepy, they said that when they said, I liked it better when the room was dark, they were actually providing an alternate punchline to your hipster joke. They weren't actually spying on us and being creepy. So I apologize to listener, third prize, you're fired.
I'm sorry that I thought you were creepy.
He's going to be wearing one of our skins as a suit, but we will apologize the entire time we're in the well.
In the meantime, I should take a moment here to say, if and you want, you can join us for the Rick Emerson Show later at rickemersonshow.com. Rick is out of town, but I am going to be doing some live new blather for about 45 minutes to an hour before, and then we are going to be kicking into old episodes, best of shows from the heyday of the Rick Emerson Show.
The solid days, if you will.
Today, you will get to enjoy Blood Rock's DOA at the request of many people. They'll be playing the infamous unintelligible Steven Seagal interview. Tim Riley, a piece from Tim Riley when he talked about the cancellation of Muslim Fun Day at a theme park. And a total nerd fest conversation between Rick and Sarah arguing Star Wars versus Harry Potter. So that will be at rickemersonshow.com later. Because, you know, if you subscribe, 32 cents a day, my friends, you get to listen to all that stuff. And your
voice.
And Rick's out of town, and I sort of feel like I owe people because they paid us. They're paying us money. So I need to actually kind of. Hopefully, I'll be able to play the sounds and things better than I'm playing them on this one. Go ahead.
I just had one sad story here. I know that as bad as things may appear, you know that it gets worse.
Oh, sorry. That was the happy story music.
For those of you that are fans of Gallagher.
Save that. Let me do the entertainment news music. If you listen very, very carefully, you'll hear it's time for entertainment news. Shh, everyone be quiet. There you go. This is Jim Willig with your entertainment news.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this without breaking up, but I'm going to take a run at it. Gallagher.
Is he dead?
Sadly, no. Oh. That would be the silver lining, but unfortunately, he still exists. Though in what state, we are not sure. The gonzo stand-up comedian, famous for whacking a watermelon, collapsed last
night.
Not
a euphemism.
No. Collapsed last night during a performance at a club in Rochester, Minnesota. His manager, Christine Scherer, confirmed reports that the 64-year-young comic was resting at St. Mary's Hospital and could be there a couple of days while they await results of tests. According to the Rochester Post-Bulletin, Gallagher was stricken while attempting to strike a watermelon with a sledgehammer during his act at the Whiskey Bones Roadhouse.
Yeah. Best show ever.
Yeah. Gallagher's next two shows, scheduled for tonight and tomorrow in Vernon Hills, Illinois, have been canceled.
Aww.
Cards, flowers, and various other pieces of produce can be sent to Gallagher, care of the Rick Emerson Show.
And again, $5, anybody who runs into his hospital room and just whacks his bowl of Jell-O with a mallet.
Well, I mean, seriously, how long can a body run on booze and hate and
just bitterness?
Yeah, and your only
misogyny.
Exercise is beating a poor defenseless watermelon with, I mean, seriously, and watermelon, I think, in the fruit kingdom is like the lovable fat kid, often picked on by the other fruits, rarely, given that it's due, and when it is, it's basically picked on by a balding guy in tie-dye who's beating the snot out of you with a cartoon mallet. Mm. It's ridiculous.
Or his brother, Gallagher, too.
Oh, yeah, the one that pretended to be Gallagher?
Yes, who went around as Gallagher 2, doing Gallagher's act. And it said in small print in the thing that he was Gallagher's brother. But, yeah, he actually promoted himself as Gallagher 2 and dressed like Gallagher. And
was it Gallagher number 2 or Gallagher as an also?
I think it was Gallagher like Roman numeral 2, something like that.
Gallagher the 2nd.
Apparently Gallagher the 1st.
Pope Gallagher the First
didn't care for that so much.
No.
With all of his bitterness and anger and all.
Yeah, well, at least it gave him something else to be hate-filled on. And it's inspiration to all you young, bitter people out there. If you live a life of rage, you can get to the ripe old age of 84 and still be active.
By the way, somebody in the text box asked me to clear this up. Was the club actually called Whiskey Bones? Is that what you said?
Whiskey Bones Roadhouse. house. So come for the steak, stay for the show.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm sure. Isn't it great that in, like, you know, after, I don't know.
He used to play like arenas and such, didn't he?
Yeah, 6.5 decades on this planet. 4 of those decades being wildly renowned HBO comedy specials. You're now doing a Whiskey Roadhouse, I'm sure, outside of Rochester, Minnesota.
Sam Elliott trying to keep the peace while you're smacking your watermelons. You're gonna keep back. Do not look Mr. Gallagher directly in the eye, or I will have to ask you to leave.
The ghost of Patrick Swayze was unavailable for comment, sadly. Even Whoopi Goldberg.
Yes, and as someone says in the text box, nothing worse than your brother watering down your racist brand of non-comedy.
Well played. Well played. For the win. Was that Charlie Sheen who sent that in? Odds are yes.
Are we done with some more entertainment?
We do. Mel Gibson charged with domestic violence. Go fig.
Huh? What?
Mel Gibson.
No.
Yeah, that's right. Riggs was charged today in Los Angeles Superior Court with misdemeanor domestic violence in connection with the rarely publicized January 6, 2010 incident involving his girlfriend, Oksana Goryoma, basically mail order friend. A hearing is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. today, where Gibson and his lawyers will reportedly plead no contest. Gibson's spokesman had no comment.
Really?
Yeah.
I think there was isn't there another Mel Gibson thing there?
Mel Gibson appeared in court today. Oh. Actually, it's a continuation.
Oh, okay.
And pled no contest to misdemeanor battery in connection with the incident, and managed to avoid jail time under the plea deal. Gibson must complete 52 weeks of domestic violence counseling. Do you think 52 weeks is enough? Do you think a full year?
I hope he has to sit in on, like, group therapy sessions with, like, low-life, you know, wife-beater guys. Just a whole bunch of them sitting around. It's like, yeah. And now, Mel, would you like to share?
Well, I just remember I was on the set of Braveheart, and she brought me a room temperature bottled water, and I specifically asked for 47 degree bottled water, and I just, next thing you know, I'm beating her within an inch of her life. I'm trying to figure out what's broken in me. Where do things go wrong?
Meanwhile, all the other guys in the group are like, she took my meth, and so I gave her what for.
And Mel's just like, I don't see anything wrong with any of us. He must perform 16 hours of community service and organization Mending Kids International. So
he's going to, like, stitch them back together when they're broken?
It's like, you are now conjoined, so saith the Gibson. Though the misdemeanor carries a possible sentence of 1 year in jail, Gibson will serve no time under the deal. Because we don't really want Mel Gibson contaminating our pure inmates and our prison goers.
No, he might be a bad influence on those in prison.
Jeez, I didn't know how bad things could get. But Blair Burke, Mel Gibson's attorney, made it clear during the actor's hearing that he was not entering a no-contest plea as an admission of guilt, but doing so because it's in the best interest of the children.
Oh, the children.
Yeah, they've got a 1-year-old, Lucia, was not in the courtroom having waived her appearance.
Yeah, you don't want to destroy, you know, all of the great father-daughter times that are probably going on at that home with Mel Gibson.
Yeah, daddy-daughter days are really, you know, they're a holy thing that should not be messed with in any potential way. If you are a celebrity parent, how old do you think your kids should be before you give them their first PR person? You know, is that like a first birthday kind of a thing, fifth birthday?
I bet Suri Cruz already has her own, like, agent, her own PR flack.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, in the second trimester, they had already made, like, the final dealings for who was going to be, you know, regardless of what race or species was going to come out of Tomcat.
I really really don't, you know, I don't really care that much about the whole Tom Cruise, is she or is she not really his wife? Is she just a beard? Was it some kind of like an arrangement, that sort of thing? You look at their kid actually looks enough like the two of them, I believe, yeah. That, you know, that it is their natural offspring in some fashion or another.
Yeah,
the thing that bothers me is that when I pick up these horrible like ladies magazines that get mailed to my house for some reason or another, because I bought makeup and I got a free subscription to OK, which is full of people I have no idea who they are because they're almost all reality show stars. But there'll be these things about like little Suri Cruz out shopping and, you know, wearing her $600 shoes and her design. Apparently, Suri Cruz, one of Suri Cruz's outfits on any given day could like pay my rent for a month. You know, and she's like three.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, I don't know.
Yeah,
it shouldn't outrage me. It's not really my problem. God knows they have enough money that they can buy $500 dresses for their kid. But just think, wow, is it just a countdown until we see her in rehab, until she goes all Lindsay Lohan on everyone?
I'm sure that there's a Vegas over-under somewhere based on that. And if not, they should start doing that with all celebrity children and non-celebrity children, these reality, quote-unquote, stars that we have, where they're just normal, effed-up people as opposed to people with legitimate talent that at one point in time entertained us for an hour and a half in a movie somewhere along the way. It boggles the mind that this kind of attention can still get merited onto that. I think when I was in my mid-teens before I owned a pair of jeans that didn't have Tough Skins written on them somewhere, and even those were hand-me-downs or purchased at a thrift store, so like they had the iron-on patches that weren't actually fabric, they're more like retread tires with a certain color scheme on them to sort of match the clothes I was wearing. It's ridiculous. And what does this teach the kid? I mean, it basically lets them know that because you were the spawn of two people that have scads amount of money, you will never know what it is like to be an actual person. And then at some point in time, they're going to try and follow in their parents' footsteps and not be able to relate to regular humans because they'll be living in a hyperbaric chamber for the better part
of
life.
Then you end up like, you know, building yourself your own theme park with llamas and getting your nose replaced and living as a recluse and naming your kid Blanket.
Yeah. So this is the life you've been born into, Suri. I'm really sorry. Once the Mayan calendar ticks down and the zombies take over, there's really going to be no one left to kind of to protect you. So to learn early and often self-defense and best of luck to you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're pulling for you, Suri Cruz.
Yeah. I would like to see you make something of yourself.
We have any more anything? We got like a couple more minutes of the show, so I don't know. If you have anything, we could read it. Otherwise, I could do something.
I'll throw it back over to you then.
Oh, okay. Then we'll say that's all of the entertainment.
That's fit to read.
Nobody could hear that music anyway, so it doesn't matter. Upset about waiting for his food, a Denny's customer expressed his displeasure early Tuesday by walking outside and firing at least three pistol shots. This was in, surprise, Orlando, Florida.
No!
Immediately after the 3:27 a.m. gunfire, Frederick Lewis Sims was accused of speeding away from the eatery in a Cadillac Escalade with several friends. When police stopped the vehicle, they found a .22 caliber Ruger pistol under Sims' seat, along with a marijuana cigarette.
Oh, see? No.
The pistol was ready to fire with one cartridge in the chamber and four more in the magazine. Officers confiscated the pistol, the joint, and charged Sims, 31, with discharging a firearm in public and possession of less than 20 grams of cannabis. Sims, whose address is on Ivy Lane in Orlando, is being held in jail at $2,600 bail. Again, this happened because he was upset because it was taking too long for his food to come at Denny's.
Well, okay, in this gentleman's defense, do you know how long it takes for a really good grand slam to be put together properly, for the sausage placement to be just right, for the bacon to not be too crispy and yet not too chewy, to have from that just right consistency?
That's true. Well, that moon's over my hammy does not make itself,
no,
sir.
No, it does not. No, it does not. And sometimes it's so good that you want to walk out into the parking lot, get baked, and fire off a couple of rounds from a Ruger into the sky. Just let others around you know how satisfied you are with your meal selection and location choice.
Woohoo! That was one good super bird.
I gotta let my other friends know. Dear Lord in heaven.
I was going to close out the show, but I lost it. There it is. Okay. There's some music. This has been Legion of News. Thank you so much for joining us. Legion of News comes to you each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk today with me is Big Jim Willick. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler. Chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemersonshow.com. Should you care to listen to more hilarity as I try to run the board by myself and don't know what I'm doing. This has been another exciting episode of Legion of News.